and you're listening to It's All About Food. We were just talking about the changes that have gone on over the last few decades, things that are making it easier for people to transition to a healthier plant-based diet, all the tools and books and social networking and online resources. It's really wonderful. But here's something that I didn't say that I've just kind of been thinking about over the last few minutes, and maybe it was talking about those leafcutter ants. I don't know. But I think there's some sort of global consciousness. And as we all learn things, whether we read that information or talk about it with other people, I want to think that we're all moving forward together along some timeline or thought line where we're getting to a better place. And I'll clarify that a little bit more in a little bit, but right now I want to introduce my next guest, Rena Burton, who has written a brand new cookbook, Let Them Eat Vegan, and she is the author of the best-selling vegan cookbooks and an at-home mom to three girls. She's been vegan since 1995, when little was known about eating and cooking vegan. Not long after graduating with her business degree and working in the marketing field, she followed her true passion of writing recipes and cookbooks. And we're going to learn a lot more about Drina and find out about all her blog sites and websites and books and recipes. Welcome to It's All About Food.
Hi, Karen. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I can't believe I haven't talked or met you before, but just like J.C. Corcoran was talking about a little earlier, we used to think we knew all the vegans. And now there are just so many of us, and it's beautiful.
It's grown a lot in the last few years, especially.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that must be good for the cookbook world.
I think so, and I noticed that a lot of people that contact me and that use my books, they're not always, you know, completely vegan, but doing their best or transitioning or just making their way to that plant-based diet. So it's become far more accepted to even have that vegan cookbook in your kitchen than
that's
it used
right
to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a scary, ugly word anymore.
Right.
Yeah. So you're a mom, you have three kids, and you have one of them's a little baby, right?
Yeah, well, she's my baby. She just turned three.
Oh, she's a big girl.
Yeah. No, she's my baby. yeah, three girls, 11, 7, and 3. Yeah. Busy.
yeah, we'll talk about kids because it's such an important topic, but I wanted first to clarify a little bit more of this, where I was going a moment ago before I introduced you. It's a little woo-woo-wah-wah, but maybe talking about it, I'll make more sense to myself and everyone else. But I was reading in your book, I'm not exactly sure where it was, but I think those of us who've been doing this vegan thing for a long time, we learn along the way. And so it started out as this kind of boring brown rice and steamed vegetables things. Not that there's anything wrong with brown rice and steamed vegetables. It's a perfect meal many times. But we've definitely improved and expanded on our culinary expertise and variety. And I'm saying we because I think it's sort of in the global consciousness somehow that we're all moving along together. And these changes kind of happen individually, but also somehow as a group somehow. I'm not quite mm-hmm. sure, but I was reading your book and nodding my head a lot all along the way, going, mm-hmm. yep, I get that. I've been there. Mm-hmm. So,
it's funny. We often, like you say, we have a lot of the similar experiences, especially if you have been eating a vegan diet for a little while, and I agree. I think that people want to see what is so beautiful and exciting about food and try to make it almost an art at times. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like you said, sometimes the simplest meal of brown rice and some veggies with a quick sauce is just what you need that night. That is, you know, exactly what your body wants and also maybe all you really have the mental energy to prepare. But there is something so exciting and just, you know, fabulous about taking interesting groups of flavors and taking a meal and making it particularly special, maybe just with a sauce or just with a technique, and just to show that, you know, this food is pretty darn exciting and I think that's why it's reaching that level, is because we want to communicate that it's not that boring meal that people think it is.
Yeah, well, that's where the trend is going. That's where the excitement is. The color, the variety, it's in plants. It's not in flesh.
That's so true.
It just isn't. I mean, there are so many more varieties of all kinds of crazy plant foods out there, and so many different things that we can do with them, and it's really, really fun. And we certainly are seeing that in your most recent cookbook, and it's different from your previous ones. I have the Eat, Drink, and Be Vegan cookbook, mm-hmm. also very mm-hmm. nice. And you also mentioned in your introduction that eating vegan is so much more than not eating animal foods. Can we talk mm-hmm. about that a little bit?
Absolutely. I think if there's often people are drawn to veganism for different reasons. I was brought to eating vegan from a health perspective, and a lot of people come from an ethical perspective. But I think if you are only concerned about the ethics, you can't serve those ethics very well unless you're nourished well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, I don't think that people can stick with eating vegan long if they're not eating a really wholesome whole foods diet. It's just not going to serve their body well. And I sometimes hear, you know, from people that, oh, this is vegan or that's vegan, but it's pure junk.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the point of eating it when it's just basically garbage to your system? It doesn't matter if it's labeled vegan or anything else. So it's far more than just saying that it's vegan. We need to look at what's going to be healthy for us and good for the planet as well, and that will really do so much more to promote veganism when you can be the best ambassador of your body and be healthy.
So I'm thinking of some analogies that are just rushing into my head right now, and I'm thinking, just like in the women's movement, women had to be better than men in certain areas in order to be hired. Just like with people of color, they needed to be better in their field in order to be hired. And so as vegans, we need to know more about nutrition and a variety of other things, because especially years ago, but it still happens today, people really harass you, and most people know nothing about nutrition. And what they learn about nutrition is from advertising and very little else. And so as vegans, in order to defend ourselves, we need to be smarter about food.
It's so true. We're always being challenged. It's like we need to walk around with the food encyclopedias or something and whip to this category of nutrient, this vitamin, and oh, I get vitamin B here and have it at the ready for everyone.
Oh, and really? Yet, we're all like little quasi-dietitians. We have to be.
I know I've absorbed a lot of knowledge over the years, and I'm not a nutritionist or, you know, certified in that capacity, but I certainly know a lot about food and what's nourishing and basic components of what we need to be healthy, and far more than probably a lot of parents. And yet I'm often the one looked at as, you know, as a parent, how are you meeting this need for your child?
Yeah.
I don't question whether another parent is getting fiber for their child or
exactly.
vitamin C or, you know, all the antioxidants they need, but yet I'm very, I know that it would be quick to ask me, someone would be very quick to ask me, where are you getting the protein, of course?
Yeah, so, and then, yeah. I mean, there are so many different responses to that favorite
yeah.
question. but people just assume that they're getting the right food, eating whatever diet it is they've been raised eating. And yet, I mean, we know today the standard American diet is life-threatening. It is not health-promoting.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's, I think people find it difficult to question their diet, or either, I think it's sort of a two-pronged thing. First, they maybe don't want to question it because it's hard to look at. Because it involves a big commitment to change. So sometimes it's an issue of awareness. Do they know? And once they have that information, then are they actually ready to do something about it? Because it takes some change, and also our food and the way we look at food and our connection to food, it's so rooted in how we grew up and our traditions and our memories, and sometimes we just have to let some of that go and find a new path for ourselves and our families.
Now, I you probably experienced this. Maybe I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to phrase this one, but I think vegans, although we're a very loving, non-judgmental, compassionate group of people, we can be really critical when it comes to ingredients in food because we've become so knowledgeable about diet. And as time has gone on, many vegans, not all though, there are junk food vegans, but many are talking more about whole grains and wheat-free and gluten-free and soy, yes or no, and everybody's got their thing. And so when we're offering recipes to reach the lowest common denominator, it's a little more challenging.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. It's harder than ever. And when I wrote this book, I made a point of offering allergen specifications within the recipes to say wheat-free, gluten-free, soy-free. To me, those were the big ones that...
Yeah, I always tell people there's nothing in this. There's no calories, there's nothing in it. It's just delicious.
Just take a gulp of air. And so, yeah, those things continually come up. And when I was first writing recipes, I never really thought too much about that. I just thought about them being vegan and yummy. And now it's, okay, can I modify this to... make it accessible for someone who cannot eat gluten, because I want it to be. I want people to be able to enjoy the recipe, and so I'll work in the kitchen to try and tweak it. Sometimes it's easier than other times. Sometimes it takes quite a few tests to get that right, but I do want to make it out, you know, I want to make it quite open and approachable for people that they can try just about any recipe in there. I do lots of soy-free options and give people, here's one option with nuts and no soy, and here's the other option with soy and no nuts. So, it's tricky. There's a lot of that now, and perhaps there's some allergies, but I think it's also people trying to just eat a little cleaner and healthier.
Well, I know myself, I want to please everyone. I know where I got that from. I know it. I know my mom is just like that. She always wants to please everyone and make great food for everyone.
Were we separated at birth? Sounds familiar.
And so, you know, as a vegan, I always wanted to veganize everything. And so that meant no dairy, no eggs, of course, no honey. And that wasn't that challenging, although it took time and learning from different people like yourself and other people. We all kind of moved forward. And then, you know, the challenges were added. My niece was diagnosed with celiac disease 2 years ago when she was 4 years old, and so I started working on not using wheat. And every time I eliminate something, I find my repertoire expands.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. It's a real growth in cooking, and all of a sudden it's the whole necessity is the mother of invention, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once you can't use something, you start to think outside of the box of how you can make that component of your meal another way, or make that treat or dessert or snack, whatever it is. You just start to think differently. I did myself when one of our daughters was born, and I had to do a little bit of a food elimination. Because she was reacting, when I was breastfeeding, she was having some reactions, and all of a sudden I realized, okay, if I can't use all of these things, what do I now do? And so even in those times, which seem so desperate because all of your favorite things are gone, you start to expand and learn new things, and all of a sudden you have, like you said, a new repertoire.
Right. May I ask, what did you discover what it was that was disturbing her?
See, it's interesting about the things that we tend to have sensitivities to. It's usually our favorite things, right? it's almost the foods that we're overdoing. And I had it with two of our daughters, and the first one, she was having some sensitivities with citrus and strawberries and wheat at the time. It's very strange because you don't always think that things like citrus or strawberries actually cause reactions, but at certain points they do. And then with our third daughter, I did as well, and I had to cut out quite a bit. It was a little bit restrictive for a while, but again, it was some of the things that I was eating a lot at the end of my pregnancy and loving. citrus again came up, and I remember I was eating tahini sauce with loaded with just lemon juice, and I could sit and eat that with some like organic tortilla chips, and I would just lap it up.
Oh, I love that.
It was the
tahini
best thing ever.
Lemon dressing on anything. Love
right,
it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and it was just a period of time. It seemed like years, but it was really about 5 or 6 weeks, and then I could start to bring back things in that I was kind of eating just far too regularly, and yeah, so it worked out. But it definitely was. It definitely put me to the task.
It's just interesting the way children will test you.
Oh, it is.
Whether they're aware of it or not, in the womb or out.
That's right.
Okay, so tell me about raising children on healthy food, because this is probably the number one problem we're facing today in the United States. 1 in 3 children now are obese, and it's affecting their performance in school. It's certainly affecting health and health care. Parents don't know how to feed their children.
It's so shocking and saddening, and yet in the past few months you've probably been aware as well, some of the media stories coming out about, you know, is vegan parenting safe, and can we meet our needs, and this, that, and the other. There's so much information out there now to support that it is not just safe, but it's healthy, and it's it helps fend off diseases and actually promotes their health rather than put them at risk for illnesses and diseases and allergies and all kinds of things that a lot of children are going around just feeling not well and maybe not diagnosed with something. And our girls, they have a real appreciation, and I say it a lot and it sounds so hokey, but they really appreciate good food. They really appreciate real food and good food, and they know the difference between something that's made with flavors and colorings and then something that's made that's real. And we have been out at times, and they've been offered, you know, popsicles and things that are, of course, vegan, but they're crap. And they will eat them, and they say it tastes funny. And I say, well, yeah, because it has colors in it, and it has flavors, and you're not used to those things. So toss it out, and I will give you something at home. And they always go for it because they realize that it just doesn't taste very good. And some of their very favorite meals are the most, you know, wholesome things, and they just have an appreciation for it. And I'm not saying they eat everything, because my kids don't eat all of the vegetables I would like them to. They have their own, you know, preferences and dislikes, but they eat really well, and they are better for it. They are healthy and full of energy, and yeah.
Well, we can just take a two-second moment to scream every time we hear people focusing on the vegan diet and is it healthy enough for children, because we definitely are having this crazy epidemic today with children not eating well, and the focus is in the wrong place. The vegans are not the problem.
Yeah. And as vegan parents, we tend to be the ones that do educate ourselves.
Exactly.
Of course, we are so so concerned about doing the right thing for our child. When you have a child and you look at that baby and you know that you are the one responsible for its well-being and bringing that child up to be a good person, a healthy person, and helping them make good decisions, you want to do everything you can to do the right thing by that child. So as a vegan, and I know for myself, especially doing this over 11 years ago with our first daughter, I read and researched and, you know, did everything I could until I felt completely comfortable with what I was doing, but there was nothing that told me that it was not a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's that much more support for feeding our children on this wholesome diet, and yet, you know, the challenges are still out there.
You know, the other thing is, I talked about this on another show recently, because there have been some books coming out about raising children like children are raised in France, with an education about food. And I'm not saying that they do everything right in France. They certainly don't. I lived there for 4 years, and just like anywhere, they've got some great things going on and some not great things going on. But one thing that they believe that's important is that children from day one should be educated about food, how to eat properly, and the importance of mealtime and not to be distracted with other things, and quality food. And you know, we don't give our kids credit that they should start with this information, just like other things that we teach our children from very young. Somehow we lost this this skill or this need in our culture to educate about food, and as a result, most adults don't know anything about food. So what can they teach their children?
Well, and that's, I think, where it starts, really, and that's the trouble. And I think parents sometimes don't, you know, I know it's scary at times for parents to look at making the changes, but it really is harder to look at than actually doing it. It's easier to do it than you think in your head, because the whole notion of changing your diet and making that transition from the meat and dairy sort of centric way of eating to eating a plant-based diet, it does look daunting, but it really is easier than people think. I hear that from people all the time. Oh, I thought it was going to be much harder. But as a parent, I can see that it's somewhat scary
mm-hmm.
for them. And so it's really easier to stay in that mold and not want your child to know that much about nutrition, because the change can be difficult. There's education that needs to go to the parents before, obviously, the children can get anywhere. And sometimes the kids come home wanting to change the parents, and they're very defensive about it because the change is maybe a little bigger than they want to be.
It's change. It's change. That's all. It's that scary word, change.
Yeah.
We're comfortable, fat and comfortable and sick.
Yeah.
And then there's the other issue. I was talking to Ruby Roth recently. I don't know if you've seen her two children's books.
I know about, I saw lots about her recent book, The Vegan is Love book.
And it's another piece of this thing about not educating our children about food. So, okay, maybe we don't have to give them the gory details about what's going on with animals, but people should know where their food comes from, and we don't. And, you know, hamburgers don't grow in hamburger patches. And I remember one child asking him at 5 or 6 years old, where do apples come from? And he said, from Publix, the store. Not realizing it was a tree.
Right.
And, so we need to be educating more about food. And so you're inspiring people to do that. Let's just take a look at this cookbook. This is your fourth cookbook. And was there anything different, your approach or putting this together, since you had already done three before?
Yeah, with this one, I've always cooked from a Whole Foods perspective. When I became vegan, there wasn't a lot of those, you know, substitutes on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And because it just wasn't. It wasn't the time and place. I became vegan before. When I was vegan, there was soy milks in the market, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Was, you know, no almond milk, no coconut milk, or any of these extras, and there certainly wasn't things like faux meats, the vegan meats, or vegan cheeses, sour creams, none of that. So my cooking began without those products, and when they came onto the market, I never really started to use them. There was a few that I played around with. And then when I came to writing this book, I really wanted to show people that you don't need to use them. And sure, you can have them on the occasion for, you know, treats or fun, whatever, but that we can cook really delicious things, creamy sauces, you know, decadent desserts, lots of things without having to use the substitutes, and also from a Whole Foods perspective. So even all of the desserts in the book, like cookies and cakes, I use whole grain flours and keep them wheat-free and gluten-free as well.
Mm-hmm.
And just to show people that it can be done and things don't have to use as much sugar as you think or as much oil. So it doesn't have to be this ultimate crazy all-out decadent.
Right. Well, it's a really, really nice-looking book. There's some really beautiful pictures in here by
Hannah Kaminsky,
right, mm-hmm. Yeah, I've spoken with her, really great. We just have a few seconds left, so what are the websites people should go to learn more about you and your books?
Oh, okay, great. My website is plantpoweredkitchen.com, and then I'm also on Facebook, Drina Burton, and Twitter, Drina Burton.
Okay, thank you for joining me today on It's All About Food. I really enjoyed it, and I'm going to dig in more with this cookbook, Let Them Eat Vegan. Looks really yummy.
Thank you, Karen.
Okay. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Thank you so much for joining me. And remember, ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com, that's your source for all good plant food lifestyle things. And have a delicious week.